Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
That's the tritone. It's three whole steps.
And that is Deborah Bolden, artistic director of Boston's Chameleon Arts Ensemble,
which in the 17th and 18th century was known as the Devil's Chord, and composers were taught to avoid it at all costs.
But of course, composer Claude Debussy runs right toward it in his dreamlike work, Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun.
And here, Debussy built his entire piece around this, and it's nothing short of magical.
That magic in music, whether it be transforming notes from devilish to delightful, or the sheer dreamlike quality of early 20th century compositions, that magic is at the heart of the Chameleon Arts Ensemble's 15th anniversary season finale, titled Mystic Moons and Dream Music. The concert itself is the product of a dream. Artistic director Deborah Bolden once had an epiphany, scrawled it on a piece of paper, and taped it to the wall.
Arnold Schoenberg, Claude Debussy, Igor Stravinsky. All three together, what kind of an evening would that be? Well, they are each in their own way extremely revolutionary composers. They set music on a new path, each one. And each of the works that we're playing is an epical work that stood at the beginning of a new musical aesthetic.
So tell me about why you chose this piece in particular.
Well, it's Debussy's supreme achievement. He wrote it in 1894. It was inspired by a poem by the great symbolist poet Stefan Mallarmé titled The Afternoon of a Faun. And it represents the emergence of the Impressionist movement in music, which was a label given to it to explain these kind of washes of sound that people could equate with the washes of color that they saw in the paintings of Monet or Manet at the time.
Well, let's move on to the next composer in the program, and that's Arnold Schoenberg. And you've decided to play Piero Lunaire, and we've got a bit from the first movement of that.
Den Wein, den man mit Augen trinkt, gießt nachts der Mond in Wogen nieder. Und eine Sprengflut überschwemmt den Stier.
So, Deborah, this, to a certain degree, has the same dreamlike quality to it, but maybe not as pleasant a dream.
Yes, well, it's definitely creepy. The vocalist is doing a very interesting invention of Schoenberg. It's called Sprechstimme, which lives somewhere between singing and speaking. The words and the rhythms are very precisely notated, but the pitches are intended to be approximate, and it's one of the things which makes Piero Lunaire live somewhere between cabaret and concert music. What he did was to devise an entirely new system of composition that basically did away with all of the rules for tonal harmony from the 18th and 19th century. It was like taking a left turn. Debussy's innovations in harmony are kind of like going through the parkway. And Schoenberg is left turn, there you are.
Lust, Akkorde, Stirn,
also it's a little bit astringent, but it still has that kind of spidery, wispy quality to it sometimes.
Well, let's move on to the last piece that the Chameleon Arts Ensemble will be playing. This is a composition that's celebrating its 100th birthday this year. Let's listen. So, Deborah, this is, of course, Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, first performed in Paris, I believe, in 1913.
In 1913. It was the date of what many historians call the beginning of the modern age in music. It was the occasion of the most famous riot in music history. It's amazing to think that a piece of classical music could cause a riot. This was, by the way, incidentally, it was for a ballet.
Right, and I've heard that really what the audience may have objected to was the ballet itself.
Yes.
And maybe after a time, the music they couldn't even hear over the sounds of the riot.
That's right. And in fact, the dancers couldn't hear the music either, and the musicians couldn't hear themselves. But there were catcalls and fistfights, and it was a huge scandal, but a scandal which catapulted Stravinsky into international fame.
I've heard he wasn't even sure he wanted to compose this piece.
Well, he wasn't sure about starting, how he was going to start this piece. He describes the genesis of the piece as a vision that came to him. He says, "I saw in my imagination a pagan rite with sage elders seated in a circle and a young girl dancing herself to death to appease the gods of spring." And he mentioned this to the great ballet impresario Diaghilev, who encouraged him to go ahead and write it, and he'll stage it.
And musically, what were the innovations in the piece itself?
Well, more than anything else, the Rite of Spring's innovations are rhythmic. Never before had anyone created a piece with such brutality and force of rhythm. It drives the entire piece. And he had started experimenting with this idea in his two previous ballets, Firebird and Petrushka, but in The Rite of Spring, he blows the door wide open. And in fact, the rhythms were so complicated that even Stravinsky didn't know himself how he was going to notate them. By the time we get to the final sacrificial dance with the girl spinning and spinning until she's dead, he could play it on the piano, but he couldn't figure out exactly how to notate it. And eventually he settled on changing meters every single bar, 2-3, 2-3. And this was something that no one had done before, and it was murder on the dancers, and you can imagine what it would be like to play this kind of music for the first time. Now this is language that we understand and we know, but in the beginning, it was shocking.
Now, Deborah, the Chameleon Arts Ensemble is going to be performing a special version of The Rite of Spring. Is that right?
Yes, we're playing the version that Stravinsky created for piano four hands. It required four hands, incidentally, to cover all of the parts that normally 100-plus musicians would. And he composed at the piano, so it was not unusual for him to have piano scores of his large orchestral works. And he performed this, the two-piano version, in June of 1912 with none other than his friend, Claude Debussy, which is an interesting connection to the rest of our program. And it was They performed it at a party in Paris, and the audience was dumbfounded. They didn't know what to make of it, and Debussy himself called it a beautiful nightmare.
So we get back to this the dream theme that really ties all these works together.
Yes.
And the fulfilling of your dream of what it would sound like to bring these three composers together. And now I also want to know what else is hanging on your wall for as a glimpse into future programs.
Oh, those are highly, highly confidential until they come out.
Well, we're glad that this dream of yours has come true.
Thank you.
Deborah Bolden is the artistic director of the Chameleon Arts Ensemble. The program Mystic Moons and Dream Music will be performed May 18th and 19th at First Church in Boston. There are more details at our website, radioboston.org.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.